end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. No Andy this week, it's just you and I, Lee. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Yep, pleased to be on. We tried to hold out for a coaching hire, but not yet.
Yeah, talking of coaching hires, as I say, Andy's not here. Rumour has it he's in Florida. Is it a coincidence that they've not yet made a coaching announcement, given Andy's made the trip over there, or do you think he's really gotten an interview with Mickey?
No, I think he's actually out there doing the hiring and firing. He's actually taking Chris Greer's job, and that's why we're gonna get Andy's favorite as the head coach.
Yeah, we'll hear from Andy later on when we discuss the coaching rumors and the goings on today later on. But first, a couple of bits of news: the Pro Football Writers Association have voted for their all rookie team for 2021. And of course, Jalen Waddle, Jalen Phillips and Javon Holland all made the team. And I think that was not a surprise, was it, Lee? Because they all performed really well, as we talked about last week in our end of season awards. So any further thoughts on that one?
No, I think it just brings to light, doesn't it? You know, we see all the negative stuff by the media and by some of the fan base. You think, no, there's a lot here to build on. This is not the bottom job that's out there on the market, as some people would have you believe. You know, there's a lot here, and those guys deserved it. They were stellar all year.
Just looking at the team earlier on before we recorded, and I noticed that the Dolphins have obviously got those three players. I think the Chiefs had three players, and no other team had as many across the whole of the NFL. So I think that speaks volumes for the quality of those picks early on in the draft last year. And the question I want to ask you, Lee, is throw one out there. Do you think those picks have now saved Chris Greer's job?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you had to justify your job to Stephen Ross and those guys getting voted for like that, that's what I'm running in for, with a piece of paper saying, look what I did. Do you know what I mean? It's, if he feels that he needs to justify his job, I don't know how safe his position was. You know, you read all sorts of different things, but like, Brian Flores is not there anymore, so there's only one person who can take all the credit for it. And hey, I think we would all be doing the same in his position when they work out that well.
Yeah, absolutely. Following on from that, Javon Holland, who obviously made that team, was quoted, or he appeared on the Go Time Dolphins podcast earlier in the week, of course, with friend of the show Kadeem and his colleague Charlie, and he was quoted that he wanted to be a Miami Dolphins player for life, which is exactly the sort of thing that you want to hear from your rookies. Obviously, a lot could happen in the terms of his career, but it sounds like he's very happy in Miami.
Yeah, definitely. That's what we want for all the good players on this team, isn't it? You know, if Jalen Waddle came out today and said he'd sign for life as well, you'd probably do it. You know, Javon, that's what you want to hear from young players. So it's great to hear someone so excited to be a Dolphin.
A far cry from our last first round pick that we played the safety position, who shall remain nameless.
It's funny how things pan out, isn't it? How things can work out so differently for two players, and they're both brilliant. You know, it's nothing to do with talent, but yeah, really, really interesting how it plays out. But hey, if Javon wants to be a Dolphin for life, sign me up.
And of course, one other thing that happened this evening that you may not have seen, apparently Calvin Ridley liked a tweet saying somebody should sign him for Miami Dolphins, should go and get him. And apparently it looks like he liked the tweet.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes sense, doesn't it? We need a wide receiver. He clearly seems to have come to the kind of the end of his time in Atlanta. So you'd have to investigate. At the very least, like, you have to phone up and find out what's the price, what's his situation. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously he took time out for personal reasons, and you know, you want to make sure he's in the right place as well. But if we lined up and Calvin Ridley's on the field with us next season, I don't think there's going to be too many of us complaining about that.
Although Andy might complain, because I know he tweeted out on the podcast account last week when it was suggested Calvin Ridley could be a trade option for the Dolphins. He didn't seem that keen. And I'm completely opposite. I'm thinking, and I think Andy alluded to the fact that he's got issues. I mean, we don't know what those issues are particularly, but if any team who wanted to trade for Ridley would surely do their due diligence on him as a person, find out what the issues were, whether they've been resolved, and ultimately if a team does trade for him, whether it's the Dolphins or somebody else, then surely they must be satisfied that he's in the right frame of mind to play. And if he's in the right frame of mind to play, he's clearly going to be an asset, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And you think the price has got to be lower than before he had, you know, whatever the problems were that made him take time out and ultimately mean that that relationship has kind of come to its end. You would think it's kind of a buyer's market in that respect. And hey, I'm all for taking a chance. I don't think, you know, until we know who the head coach is, it's very difficult to know how risk averse they might be, because of course we've said it on here plenty, they don't seem to be concerned by the injury history and stuff like that, but that was the old coaching regime. Now we'll find out if that was Greer or Flores. So really interesting coming forward. I mean, if Brian Daboll's the guy, then maybe an Alabama receiver might be high on his list of wants.
Of course, that's a nice little segue into the formation coaching search. As we sit here recording this on Thursday evening, it just so happens that quite a few things have dropped in place today. Nathaniel Hackett has gone to the Broncos as their head coach. Matt Eberflus has gone from the Colts to the Bears as their new head coach. There were strong rumours Byron Leftwich was going to be appointed by the Jags, although it's become apparent the Saints might have shown a bit of late interest in him. None of those impacted the Dolphins directly, of course, because they weren't really in the frame for the job in Miami. One person who was interviewed in Miami was Dan Quinn, who's confirmed this evening that he is staying at the Cowboys. What we also know today from NFL insider Ian Rappaport is that the Dolphins are scheduling second interviews next week with Brian Daboll, Mike McDaniel, and Kellen Moore, interestingly enough, is another frame in the mind. All offensive coaches there that we know are going to be scheduled for a second interview next week. Doesn't mean to say the remainder are not going to be scheduled for a second interview, but that's what Ian Rappaport has tweeted. But the most interesting thing that's come out today, Lee, is it's getting hot now for Brian Daboll becoming the coach in Miami. There are a lot of rumours out there. If you believe everything on Twitter, he is now the head coach. But there's no smoke without fire and all of that. What are your thoughts if you followed it through today? It does seem apparent as though Daboll is the favourite at the moment.
Yeah, it's... I flip-flopped on it so much in regards to what I think they're going to do and also what I want them to do. It's, I think are very different things. When Brian Flores first got sacked, the first thing I said, and I think you put it in the group as well, was Brian Daboll. It makes too much sense. The only thing that I would hesitate about that now, and actually why I'm now fully believing, and this is with no inside knowledge at all, this is literally based on piecing together the bits of information that I believe are credible, that I think Mike McDaniels is the guy. I just believe that if Brian Daboll is the guy you wanted, you would have had that second interview this week. And I mean, if he'd bombed it, you'd be having second interviews next week. I don't see why you wouldn't have got that deal done if you really wanted him. Now he's out of the playoffs. Maybe they didn't expect him to get knocked out of the playoffs. I mean, they were playing the Chiefs. That game could easily have gone either way, or, you know, as it was close anyway. But I can't reconcile in my mind why they would wait till next week for a second interview for Brian Daboll if he was really the leading candidate. I'd have him back in for the first of the second round of interviews as such, and I would have been doing it as soon as he was able to, after they do their exit interviews and stuff in Buffalo. I don't know. I keep flip-flopping. If Brian Daboll's the coach, you know, like I say, it makes an awful lot of sense. And I would still be asking. I think if they hire him after doing a second interview next week, there's going to be a lot of questions as to, well, hang on, why have you waited this long?
I don't think it's a reflection on Dable in particular that they are waiting for a series of second interviews to be completed, because this is such an important decision they've got to make that they need to get it right. And I don't think it's unfair of them to take their time to make sure that they get the right guy. And if they've only really had one Zoom conversation with the likes of Mike McDaniel, then I can see their point of view in wanting a second opportunity to speak to him in a little bit more detail, even if it's to confirm that Dable is their guy by default. Then I don't have a problem with them having a round of second interviews, as long as they make the right choice. I can see your point of view, Lee, in terms of, well, if your man's out there and you really want him, why can't you just go and get him? And then if they did that, then I don't think anybody would have a problem. I just think they're just going to be careful and do their due diligence and make sure that they do pick the right guy.
Yeah, I just think you would have had the second interview already, even if you then ultimately waited for McDaniel next week. I think you... I don't know. I'm just too confused. I wish there was some, you know, more tangible evidence in what we've got so far.
I think also what struck me is that there isn't a lot of information coming out from beat writers. They don't seem to have been plugged into any credible sources. You have the likes of Ian Rappaport, who was the first to break that there was this second round of interviews. You have your well-known Twitter folks who have sources who have been sharing bits and pieces of information. And if you if you're on Twitter, then you'll know who those guys are. And they seem to be more in the know, in inverted commas, than some of the beat writers. So information isn't coming out freely, is it?
No, I think the one thing we know for sure is that we know nothing. But, you know, at the moment, it could go one of apparently at least three ways, if not more. So, you know, we don't really know a lot. We just know that the guys that we're interested in so far haven't taken the two jobs that have been occupied. You know, the interesting thing is when the Saints job comes on the market late in the process as such, and how that changes people's thinking, you know. I think Jags fans and the Jags organization were probably pretty confident they were going to get their guy in Byron Leftwich, and then the Saints come in and offer him an interview, and it's like, you know, it's good. As an organization, it has a far better history, regardless of the state of the cap and the roster right now. But it's certainly an interesting proposition, and also interesting because you don't know how long Sean Payton's going to stay away. Is he going to stay away forever, or is he going to come back? It seemed like he didn't really know himself. So, but if he's accepted the interview and he's going for it, so it's definitely turned his head slightly from solely looking at Jacksonville. So,
yeah, Andy, I think. Andy's currently stuck. He's having a coffee in Starbucks in Lake Buena Vista. His thoughts are he's very much in the McDaniel camp. And he thinks the Dolphins like him, or they'd be rushing to get the deal done for Dable rather than waiting until next week. So Andy's very much in that camp as well.
It makes so much sense. It's just the other thing is, I wonder if they're kind of almost slow playing it for the reason that, okay, let's see who really wants this job then. Are you going to buckle and take one of those other jobs first? You know, or do you really want to be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins? Because if that's the case, you'll wait for us to do these second round of interviews. Let's be honest. If Brian Dable hangs out and waits for the Miami job, decides he doesn't want the Giants job, for instance, you know, another one he's been linked with quite heavily, he's not really a lot worse off of spending another year in Buffalo. Chances are they're not going to be that much worse. So his head coaching chances don't kind of go down the drain with that. But, you know, if you really want the Miami job, then you kind of wait it out. Whereas I got the feeling that Dan Quinn suddenly pulled his name out of the hat for all the coaching jobs. probably because it's taken too long. And Jerry Jones is probably saying, look, Mike McCarthy doesn't get it together next season, you're probably going to be the head coach here. You know, it's well known that he likes Jerry Jones, you know, loves Dan Quinn, and rightly so. But I just wonder if he's suddenly thinking, this is, you know, no one wants me enough, so I'm going to stick it out here and see what happens. Because he's going to be a hot candidate again next year anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to circle back to Brian Daboll again. Something that I saw on Twitter today, and I'll give Dolphins Talk the credit for this. Mike posted the offensive rankings for teams that Daboll has been the offensive coordinator for, and they make for interesting reading. For example, in 2009 with Cleveland, they were ranked 32nd. The following year also with Cleveland, they were 29th. He then joined Miami, of course, which we mentioned last week. He had a stint there for a year and was 22nd. He then went on to Kansas City, where he was 24th. And then he had a six-year gap before he joined Buffalo. And in 18 and 19, his offenses ranked in a similar position to where they were, where the other teams were, 30th and 24th, respectively. And it was only in 2020 and 21 that he jumped up to second and fifth. And the thing that immediately stands out for me is the quarterback. Are his offenses successful because he's had a good quarterback, or is it because he developed the right scheme, or he became more experienced? What do you think the factors are there for? And is that a bit of a concern from your perspective, Lee, in terms of those rankings?
I'm glad you brought this up because I have a lot of thoughts on this.
The floor is yours.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. I don't think it matters is where I'm going to start by saying, because I'm not bringing him in to coach the offense. We've done that and it hasn't worked. I need a head coach that's going to be a head coach, and they're bringing him in because he knows Tua, thus he can build around Tua, and that includes hiring an offensive coach. Do you know what I mean? If we bring in another coach that just stands on the sidelines and calls plays and lets the rest of the team go to hell, then we're no better off than we were last year or under Adam Gase before that. So, you know, the kind of raw numbers don't bother me that much. We know that you could be the best coach in the world, but those same coaches that everyone, you know, that are the Hall of Fame, and Bill Belichick is the best of all time, couldn't get it done in Cleveland when he had less talent. Nick Saban couldn't get it done in the NFL. Urban Meyer, that worked out. Do you know what I mean? You know, you can go off the numbers and the championships and the wins. It's just there's so much more to it than simply that. Like, obviously, his offense has jumped when he's got the best quarterback he's probably worked with. I mean, I suppose you could say he's definitely not holding him back. But yeah, it doesn't bother me that much. I saw it brought up a lot when the, you know, the coaching search first started, those numbers. And I say they're not great, but that's not the job I'm asking him to do. I wouldn't hire him as an offensive coach based off those numbers. But, you know, that would give me more trepidation right now, because he's not got a Josh Allen. Like, you can't run Tua the way that you run Josh Allen, because they use him kind of as a running back. You know, we don't have a quarterback to do that. Most teams don't have a quarterback to do that. So I think you lose a large part of his offense when, you know, if you would take him as an OC, but say that's not the job he's being hired for.
You think the fact that the Dolphins are bringing back three offensive-minded coaches for a second interview, and let's just assume for a moment that they are the only three because they're the ones that we know, do you think that means that they're happy with the defense and are expecting any head coach to leave that side of the ball alone? Because we all recognize the fact that it is a good unit and it doesn't need much tampering, if any. So do you think the emphasis is being placed on the offense, and that's being reflected in the fact that there are three offensive-minded coaches being coming back for a second interview?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. I think I can't remember who put it online today. There was some talk earlier on that the defensive coaching staff are safe-ish in regards to Greer and Ross don't want to get rid of them. Obviously, a new head coach might do that, but it would make you feel like that there's a possibility where these three guys have also said, okay, I'm willing to find out what we've got with the defensive coaches. Doesn't mean they're around forever. Do you know what I mean? But maybe I'm at least willing to give this a go, which obviously means you're not got to pay to get rid of a bunch of coaches on the staff. Also, it means you may be able to employ the same defenses that you've been playing for the last couple of years. Obviously, that gets you into the whole conversation of how much was Flores, how much was the defensive coaches, because we saw that sort of problem all year. Early in the process, it was mentioned that Mike McDaniel might have more of a problem putting a staff together, but that would seem like a benefit, something that would benefit him greatly, that half that is done for him. I would say that there's a good chance that those three guys were at least willing to entertain the idea of keeping the current defensive staff around.
So those, obviously, Brian Daboll, we've talked about a little bit already. Let's focus a little bit on Callum Moore and Mike McDaniel. They don't seem to be going for other teams' interviews. Those two candidates seem to have the Dolphins as their only one. And excuse me if I'm wrong, especially with regards to Callum Moore. I don't know for sure that Dolphins have only... his only coach role that he's going for. But does it speak volumes for the sort of direction that the Dolphins want to go in terms of something a little bit different? Why are they going for a couple of candidates that perhaps nobody else is showing much interest in?
I think this is probably the Stephen Ross philosophy of business, where you're trying to get an up and comer before they're the name. Like Dan Quinn's going to be the most expensive probably head coach on the market, because he has history as a head coach. He has a long history as a defensive coordinator. He's got the sort of resume to demand that. Whereas you want to get that person on the way up. You want to lock them into a 5-year deal. You know, you kind of got to almost treat it like the draft process. This is why you're trying to get a young head coach before you're having to pay him out on the open market and pry them away from somewhere else. You know, it was bandied around that would you be willing to trade picks for Sean Payton if he was willing to move, or the Saints are willing to move him, you know, and stuff like that. And I don't think that's the route they want to go. I think they kind of almost want to draft a young guy. And I think that's the way Ross kind of treats his businesses.
Yeah, he but on the flip... On the flip side to that, Lowly, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. He's 80 plus. He's getting old. His time as the owner of the Dolphins arguably is coming to an end, however many years he's got left as either the owner or whatever. But surely he would want success sooner rather than later. And can he guarantee that with a young up and coming coach that he doesn't really know what he's going to get, as opposed to somebody more experienced who's been there, done it, like Dan Quinn, who's got the T-shirt. Unfortunately, the T-shirt didn't look very good because he didn't do very well in the one Super Bowl where he was a coordinator. But is there something to be said from looking at it from that angle?
I don't think you change your philosophy just because he's old. I don't think it plays as big a factor as people are willing. I don't think it warrants as much thought as people give it. Did Bill Parcells work out as an older guy when they brought him in to try and get success? There's no guarantee bringing in an older guy. We bring in an older guy right now, the top of the list is Dan Quinn, and his biggest success is failing in the Super Bowl. So, who would guarantee success as a head coach? I don't know. Because, you know, Nick Saban must have been as much of a... Now, this is before I was a Dolphins fan, but he must have been as much of a sure thing as possible when you signed him. Do you know what I mean? Because he was successful before he came to the NFL. The same with Urban Meyer last year. Shah Khan must have thought he'd hit an absolute home run with that. The same with the Raiders hiring John Gruden out of retirement. They must have thought they'd absolutely nailed that, you know. And it finally looked like it was starting to turn the corner, only for him to hit, you know, a massive speed bump.
Called email.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if changing your philosophy and going after an older coach guarantees it doesn't guarantee success. Does it guarantee better results than the young guy? I just don't think you change your philosophy that much. If it served him this well up to his 80s, I'm not sure he's suddenly changing his mind now. But that's just me. But I can understand why people think about it. Just for me, I don't put as much stock in Stephen Ross's age. If it was as simple as he's now old and that means he needs to win now, why didn't he just do that when he first bought the team, when he really wanted the team to win? Does that mean he didn't want them to win as much beforehand? Like, he's a fan of the Dolphins, so we know that's why he bought the team, not just because he can. What a great position that is to be in, by the way.
Yeah.
Just because I can. Yeah. But you know what I mean? The pressure of him being older, if that suddenly makes him figure out how to get this team to win, I've got serious questions as to why he couldn't figure it out in the last, you know, since he took over.
Yeah, I mean, personally, my thoughts are of the three that we're now focusing on, Brian Daboll, for reasons that we've outlined before, is my preferred. I'm really curious to see how the 49ers do away at the Rams in the championship game this coming weekend, because I think if he can do a job on the Rams, and the Rams are on a tear at the moment, if he can do a job offensively on the Rams, as he has done twice this season in terms of the Niners have beaten the Rams twice, I think that could be a really intriguing option. But are the Dolphins prepared to wait even longer? And that'll be another 2 weeks after that, and before they can officially appoint him, and before he can even think about getting a staff together. So is that to the detriment of the whole process that they could in theory have to wait another 3 weeks before they appoint their man?
They did it with Flores, and if that was working into your thinking as to why he's the guy, you know, being kind of proving himself again this week, then he's worth the wait. Also, if he's open to the idea of having the current coaching staff, defensive coaching staff on board, then that's half the coaching staff filled out. That's one less problem he has to, you know, he doesn't have to fill out an entire staff. I'd also imagine that all these candidates have gone in with, like, these are the guys that have kind of got that have agreed. If I get a head coaching gig, they want to be as part of the staff. I can't think that he's going to get the job in, let's say, 3 weeks, and then, oh, I'm going to have to go find an offensive coordinator now. Like, I imagine it's further along in the process than that. But hey, all that matters is getting this decision right. I've got no problem with it being slow, other than the fact it's annoying because we want to know. But, you know, ultimately, all that matters is getting it right.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall for these coaches because not only have they got or had games to prepare for, they've also had interviews to prepare for. And it makes me wonder where on earth they find the time, because you hear about how they have to present these PowerPoint presentations on things that they would look to implement or change, and you have to wonder where on earth do they find the time, because clearly their current jobs, as long as they're in the playoffs, are going to be more important, but how on earth do they find the time to prepare for these interviews?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a team that gets knocked out and you've got a coach that's off preparing for interviews, obviously you can't stop him, and it's a good thing because it means he's done a great job with your team. But you do have to question, was that the little bit we were missing? Was it the extra couple of hours it wasn't put into this? That, you know, it's a really tough position. It's such a bizarre thing. You almost think that the NFL would stop teams starting this process until after all the teams, you know, all the coaches were available at the same time, you know, after the Super Bowl. I know that means a lot of teams waiting a long time from the end of the season, you know, everyone that doesn't make the playoffs, but kind of seems like a fairer way to do it. Obviously, it'd mean the Senior Bowl would have to be later. The draft would probably be a bit late. You know, I know it's got a massive knock-on effect. It's not as simple as just, oh, we'll just change the date, they can do it. But I don't know. Just for me, it felt a bit like, I would have questions. I would feel really nervous if my offensive coordinator was out interviewing for jobs, you know, the week of the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, one name we haven't talked about because he's only just literally quit on his team is Sean Payton, who's retired. Is that a name worth exploring? I know clearly his mind doesn't seem to be going in that direction. So in reality, he's going to take at least a year away from the game. Do you think it's somebody the Dolphins will have in the back of their minds at a later date if a new coach, for example, comes in and doesn't pan out the way they'd hoped? Do you think Sean Payton is a name the Dolphins would have considered or would consider if he became available?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. Because I think they would have moved on it sooner. I understand the love affair, and you know, if the Saints were interested in Tua, I still think a lot of this revolves around Tua. And had the Saints actually been the trade partner, that means Sean Payton's probably on board with that. Maybe it's also slightly in the thinking, look, if we bring in one of these young coaches, that obviously you're going to have to stick with me here through the hypothetical. If Stephen Ross is enamoured with Tua still as he was before, which seems like is probably at least slightly true, that they're, especially where they're looking at offensive guys, that he wants to see if that's going to work. We're going to know at the end of this year. We should know by the end of this year if he really is the guy or not. And if not, maybe Sean Payton's had a year away and you can get him then. You know, you can blow everything up. You've got two picks in the first round. You can entice him and look, we've got two first round draft picks. We can get a quarterback. We're still going to have money to spend. Like, I don't know. Are you still going to have, you know, the backbone of this team is still going to be very, very good. Plus whatever we're able to add in free agency in the draft this year. I think if you want to do it, it's probably next year. And I don't like saying that we're going to fire a head coach before we've even hired him, but I don't know, that just seems a more likely scenario than kind of going after him right now.
One of the things I did see on Twitter today, I'm just trying to find who it was that posted it, was that Charlie Fry, the quarterback's coach of the Dolphins, is rumoured to be out of a job. I'm just trying to, yeah, it was Jason Sarney, friend of the show, put a tweet out earlier that Charlie Fry's out. Do you think that has any bearing on who the incumbent is for the head coach, or is that totally irrelevant? And why now is that information coming out? Surely you would let your head coach decide that sort of thing.
I imagine that all three decided they didn't want him, which is why they were able to move on this beforehand. That's the only thing that would make sense to me, because otherwise, what if that's the guy that Brian Daboll wants and he's your guy? Then I don't know if that makes sense. I'm just guessing. None of them in their interview said, yeah, we definitely want him, which means they were willing to, you know, they're willing to kind of move on that before actually hiring the head coach. Because let's be honest, if it is just the three guys, I think we have to work with the fact that it's probably one of those three, because we've not heard any other names. Most of the other names that we know were being interviewed have kind of fallen by the wayside. Dan Quinn's pulled out. If that's the case, yeah. So I think if those are truly the guys, then they've definitely kind of signed off on it. They kind of the Dolphins know the direction these guys want to go, and if they're offensive guys, it probably means they've got offensive coaches and staff in mind already as part of their plan. That's how they've got to sell themselves, because they're offensive guys.
Let's touch on those guys a bit more, actually. Again, if you believe everything you read on Twitter, the world is going to come to an end if Vance Joseph is going to get appointed as the coach. To me, that would just be more of the same. I don't see what value he would add above Brian Flores, other than perhaps leading a bit better. It's not to say Flores was a bad leader. He was a bad communicator from what we can gather. But what can Vance Joseph offer that is different, that certainly offensively, I'm not sure there is anything there. Same with Leslie Frazier. He's gone off the radar completely in terms of, I think he was only interviewing with the Dolphins and nobody else, I believe.
Remember seeing him for anyone else, but I must say, I also missed Kellen Moore interviewing for the Dolphins. I mean, I've looked at so many Dolphins reports that I actually thought he hadn't interviewed. And when I saw him on the thing today, I did have to go back and do some research, I must say.
Yes, those two names in particular seem to have dropped off the radar a little bit. And then Thomas Brown of the Rams, somebody we've not talked about, and I personally don't know much about him other than what we mentioned last week in terms of he's only had a couple of years in the NFL with the Rams as a running backs coach or assistant head coach. Don't know what are your thoughts on him, Lee? Do you think he's somebody that they're waiting on, or do you think he's had his chance and he needs a bit more experience?
I wonder if there's a chance that maybe it's a bit more exploratory, and that yes, they are interested for the head coaching job, but maybe they're willing to offer him an offensive coordinator job. Like maybe they're not going after Mike McDaniel. Maybe it is Brian Daboll, and they want to bring him in as a run game specialist and offensive coordinator to kind of complement Brian Daboll. Don't know. But yeah, like you say, it does seem to have kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. But it was also a strange one in the first place. You know, like it did kind of come out of left field again, was one of those only being looked at by the Dolphins. Does that mean they're crazy, or does that mean they're doing better diligence than the rest of the league?
We've actually held off doing this podcast this week in the hope that some information would drop in terms of an appointment. And obviously it's not materialized to date. You know what's going to happen, don't you, Lee? We're going to finish this recording. We're going to publish it. And then they're going to appoint, aren't they?
And he's going to appoint a head coach.
Yeah. just before we come to a close then, I don't want to touch on Aaron Rodgers. Following Green Bay's surprising defeat, or some would say surprising, some would not, because they don't have a particularly good record against the Niners in the playoffs. In fact, Rodgers is 0-4. He left it open with his comments at the end to suggest that he might seek another opportunity elsewhere. And you have to look at the Broncos' appointment today of the Packers' OC as a likely destination should he want to leave Green Bay. Would you think there's any mileage in the Dolphins pursuing that if he was at least willing to talk to the Dolphins? Would a head coaching appointment be dependent on that? Would he look at the head coach first and think, yeah, or yes or no? Or do you think it's the general attraction of Miami rather than the coach that would appeal to him? I'm not saying for one moment that this is going to happen. It probably won't, but I just thought it was a conversation worth having.
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation worth having, because there's, you know, when inevitably it comes to it, you know, around draft time and people talking about him, you know, free agency, people talking about him getting traded and stuff like that, like there's going to be a lot of Dolphins fans who say, why aren't we getting involved? I don't think we're going to get involved, whether Aaron Rodgers is willing to talk to us or not, because I just think if that was the case, then you're probably better off keeping Brian Flores in the first place and putting up with the bad communication based on the fact that you're going to get in a Hall of Famer at quarterback. You've got a defense which is tops in the league. You're basically copying the Tampa Bay model at that stage. And that's fine. But I just think if that's the case, and you probably kind of ride it out with Brian Flores. I still, plenty of people are going to be angry about it, but I still think this whole thing revolves around Tua. It revolves around Tua as a quarterback, and it revolves around Stephen Ross's kind of love for Tua. Like, let's be honest, Stephen Ross is the reason that Tua Tagovailoa is a Miami Dolphin. You know, he might not have made them do it, but if you know that Stephen Ross is the owner, you know your job doesn't depend on it, but it's certainly helped by making sure he's getting what he wants, because he's a fan the same way we are. You know, you kind of have to make that pick for him. So he's on the team because Ross wanted it that way. And I think, you know, like you said, these are all offensive coaches. This is all geared about getting the offense better.
Interesting question for you. Would you trade 2 years of good success with an Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, where your team is going to compete for a place in the Super Bowl, undoubtedly with that defense and a few extra pieces, against a long-term vision where you get a young head coach who's up and coming, and we discussed it, with Tua as his quarterback, but the potential to put more pieces around in the longer term? Where would you sit there? Would you trade one off against the other? Would you be prepared to have 2 years of good success against a longer-term vision?
I mean, look, I'm not going to in any way sit here and tell you that I wouldn't want the Dolphins to win, because that's essentially what it comes down to. Would this team be good with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback? Of course it would. If that's the route they go, I'm going to be happy. I'd be unhappy because he won't be able to wear 12, and I really think the players have changed numbers. It just doesn't work well for most of them. But anyway, that's a whole another superstition that I'll get into later. But yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Winning cures everything. If Dolphins bring in Aaron Rodgers and start to win games, we're going to be happy.
It's funny. I saw somebody put a picture of Rodgers in a Dolphins uniform when he was wearing the number 8.
Yes.
It reminded me so much of Matt Moore. And I was thinking for a moment, why didn't they put him in with a picture wearing 12? And then, of course, it twigged around Greasy being number 12, and it's retired. So
I'll tell you an interesting short story. I once photoshopped a picture of Albert Wilson when he was first traded. Someone told me he was getting traded to the Dolphins. Signed by the Dolphins the year he came over. And I immediately went on Google. I had long been doing kind of jersey swaps online. And I was like, I'll stick him in a Dolphins jersey. That'd be cool. People were like that. And he was number 12 in Kansas City. So he had a number 12 jersey on. You could only see the top of the numbers. You couldn't see the full numbers. And I just left them as is. I know Brian Greasy's, Greasy's numbers retired. I know that. And people lost their minds. I was like, this is a fictional pit. Like, this isn't a real thing. Like, it's just... But yeah, it's just because he's got signed. And it's still floating around. Like, you go on Google and search Albert Wilson, Miami Dolphins, it pops up. And every time I sit on it, I just remember the grief I got for it. And I was like, it wasn't intentional. So now I purposely make sure to change numbers every time because I'm like, I can't deal with it. I know he's not going to wear 12.
I like it. We both called him Brian Greasy.
For yeah, I know.
Of course, it's Bob, isn't it?
It's because I've seen him on TV recently, Brian Greasy, and it just stuck in your head. But yeah, if Aaron Rodgers is the starting quarterback next year, like, we're going to be pretty excited for the amount of games we're going to win.
Yeah. On that note, we'll wait and see what happens with the coaching carousel. Hopefully the Dolphins will get to the point of getting somebody soon. Lee, any further thoughts before we call it a day tonight?
Yeah, I've got a question for you. So you're Chris Greer for the moment. Who's your guy? What are you doing? Who are you picking out of the candidates? You can have anyone you want. And are you sticking with the quarterback, or is it because you want to bring in a veteran? Because it could be Rodgers, could be Watson, could be anyone else who shakes it. Someone's going to suggest that we'll go after Brady because he doesn't want to be in Tampa anymore. Like, let's...
Of the candidates that have been talked about, I've always been of the opinion Brian Daboll would be a good appointment because not only has he had good success with Buffalo, he's worked with Tua, he's familiar with Miami, he has also been at Miami before, so he understands the culture and the organization, so I think he'd be able to slot right in. So I think of the ones that are being bandied about, he is the one that I would choose. I think Mike McDaniel is a good enough candidate, and I wouldn't be disappointed if they choose him ultimately. But I think Daboll offers that little bit extra in terms of the qualities that I've mentioned. So, and I would stick with Tua. I believe, like you, Lee, that we've got to find out Tua is not the guy before we move on, and we haven't yet got to that position. And I think another year, we'll be closer to knowing the answer to that question. So I think Daboll and Tua, I would select as the head coach quarterback combo next season. Interestingly, nobody's mentioned Doug Peterson, who has had also experience running with an RPO offense, and he's won a Super Bowl and he knows Miami. I find it interesting that his name has not been bandied about, but why would it? Because he's not currently attached. So you never know. He might come out of left field somewhere.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. It's interesting that he's not been mentioned. I think, was it on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, the guys there mentioned that maybe it's because he's actually too close to Miami and you don't want to hire and fire your friends. Brian Flores kind of made that mistake in that he's very close with Dan Marino. And they don't want to kind of strain that relationship by making the personal business.
And I can understand that, being a Forest fan, having seen Stuart Pearce being player manager and then manager Martin O'Neill being the manager, two Forest legends who have always been fan favourites, come in, manage the club and ultimately fail and get sacked. You think that that would taint their legacy? It did for Martin O'Neill, but it didn't, interestingly, for Stuart Pearce. He still remains an all-time hero, even though he failed. Now, I'm not saying Doug Peterson is in the same level of all-time hero as Stuart Pearce with Miami. He's not, but the same principle would apply. Do you want to hire your mates or somebody you're close to only to inevitably have to fire them at some point? I'm not sure that's workable.
Yeah, it's not. You can understand why you might just want to swerve that position, swerve that kind of situation altogether.
Well, needless to say, if there is a coaching appointment, I'm sure Lee and I will jump on and do an emergency pod. Andy will be if he's back from his scouting mission in Florida, shall we say. We've also got our top five plays of the season lined up for any slow news week. So we'll bring those to you in a future episode of the pod. But in the meantime, unless you've got anything else, Lee, we'll call it a day for tonight.
No, sounds good.
All right, as always, guys, thanks for listening. Please give us a review on the First and Ten Podcast Network. Give us a rating. We'd love to hear feedback. And until next time, bye from Lee and myself.